Coming to you live from the edge of history, it's the Hand Plus Podcast brought to you by Movie Changeup. As always, I'm your host, Joseph Ricky, with my co-host, Tristan Mayer. Each week, we break down this week in streaming, and since, hey, it's late December, we're going to be breaking down this year in streaming, talking about the most underrated of 2022 and just kind of 2022 in streaming as a whole. We only started streaming or doing this podcast in around late August, but we will be talking about all of 2022 in streaming. If you haven't watched our show before, we kind of let you know week to week what you should be watching, and now we're kind of letting people know, hey, what did you miss this year, not just this week? And if you don't know what our show stands for at this point, it's an acronym. It stands for, it's HAND: HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney, plus all your other favorite streaming services. Tristan, gonna change up your question this week. How was your year in streaming?
Pretty solid year, I think. There's definitely some platforms that did way better than others, I think, especially when you go down the list here and you think, man, why am I paying for a couple of these? So that'll be an interesting conversation. Am I going to cancel anything by the end of the episode? We'll see how that goes. But it'll be good because, yeah, we didn't start the show at the beginning of the year. And part of why we started the show is because we were seeing stuff on other platforms and saying, man, I want to talk about that. I wish I had a chance to talk about that on air. So now is kind of our chance to talk about some of those lesser known shows you would have talked about if you could have had the chance back in the day, but didn't get the shot to. So it'll be a fun conversation, a good way to look back at 2023. So yeah, I can't wait to have this conversation. Yeah, solid year so far. I'll probably have a bit better picture of it once we get through the list here, though.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, this show started as a Bad Batch weekly review show. And then as Loki was coming out, we were like, are we going to make a separate Loki show? And we're like, no, let's just do a Disney Plus kind of weekly review show. And they're like, all right, that's perfect. We're going to do that. So anytime a new Disney Plus show comes out and talks about that. And then it was at a point where Disney Plus was kind of at a lull. Nothing too hot was coming out. We were struggling for what to talk about. And we were like, want to just cover all of streaming. And we're like, sure. So we went from a Bad Batch weekly review show to a Disney Plus weekly review show to now The Hand Plus is which we are now. And I can't imagine us growing a bigger scope than this because it's already hard to keep track of everything as is.
Yeah, let me tell you, Joe, we were definitely ambitious when we said all of streaming. I was like, we could totally do all of streaming. Yeah. Looking back at some of the episodes, there's definitely stuff where it's like, I wish we could have covered that. I fell out of my radar. Didn't get to watch it in time, you know. Some of the stuff where it's like, especially in streaming, if you don't talk about it within like a week of it coming out, you might as well not talk about it for some of this stuff. But yeah, now's our chance to really go back and hit some of those highs.
Yeah, so right now we're kind of going to be talking about mixing in. We're just going to go platform by platform talking about what we watched this week as well as what we watched this year. So we're just kind of going to jump platform by platform like we said. And let's kick it off with HBO Max. You want to talk about The Fallout real quick that you watched?
Oh, yeah, this is one of my highlights for the year. The Fallout came out really, really early in the year. I think it was like the first weekend of the year, so it didn't necessarily hit as hard as it could. That definitely isn't sticking in the conversation, but Jenna Ortega is the main lead here, and Maddie Ziegler. Jenna Ortega is especially having a huge year after Wednesday and X and a lot of the big stuff that came out this year for her. So if you're a Jenna Ortega fan, you want to see her in kind of a more traditional drama, this stars her and Maddie Ziegler as two students who are together during a school shooting, and they're kind of at totally different places in life, not really connecting in school or anything like that, you know, different cliques, but they bond over this trauma of being together during a school shooting, and it kind of follows their couple of weeks after that and their emotional fallout to experiencing this kind of a trauma. And I think it's a very topical, very timely thing. It's not super hard to watch. Like, you're not going to have any really intense gory scenes or any intense violence. It's very much about the characters and their relationships. So I highly recommend it, especially if you're a Jenna Ortega fan.
All right, awesome. And something I watched earlier that I talked about a few weeks ago, but I just wanted to bring up again because I do think it was well-made film that people should watch if they're into that kind of thing, is See How They Run, which, like I said last time, but if you didn't listen, it stars Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan, and it's a whodunit. It's set in kind of like the Hollywood theater scene. And if you're a Sam Rockwell fan, Saoirse Ronan fan, a whodunit fan, I definitely check out See How They Run on HBO Max. And then I know you also watched a George Carlin documentary, George Carlin's American Dream.
And this was a two-part documentary on George Carlin, his kind of life and his career. He's always a figure that I knew of, you know, you see his clips online all the time. He was definitely somebody I watched the clips on YouTube in high school and kind of formed a lot of my, like, oh, he's really saying that. I can't believe someone's saying that. Like, it felt like I was watching something I shouldn't be watching to my nice little Catholic boy school years, you know. But, yeah, this definitely got me a better appreciation of Carlin's whole career outside of just being the guy who said the edgy stuff on YouTube videos. You know, I was able to understand him as a counterculture figure and why he means so much to, like, this really wide variety of people. You know, they bring in people from, like, Conan to Jerry Seinfeld to people you wouldn't necessarily think of as being attached to those, like, edgy comedies. Like, Jerry Seinfeld is not necessarily an edgy comedian, you know, but even he was inspired by George Carlin. So it definitely, and we talk about Netflix and how sometimes, not just Netflix, but a lot of these platforms has really got a documentary to be, like, asininely long. And this was a nice clean two episodes. You had, like, the rise of popularity of George Carlin and kind of, like, the teetering off and the end of his career and end of his life in the second half. So I really liked it a lot. And if you have any interest in Carlin and learning a bit more about his career and what made him so special, I recommend it for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. I didn't even know that existed. So, you know, we want to talk underrated. Someone who considers George Carlin one of the top three favorite comedians of all time didn't know there was a two-part Carlin documentary on HBO Max. Definitely means it's underrated. And another thing you watched on HBO Max that you wanted to bring up was Kimmy. I believe this stars Zoe Kravitz.
Yep, Zoe Kravitz, directed by Steven Soderbergh. He's been doing a lot of work with HBO Max, just dropping, like, silent droppings, randomly good movies. And this was one of the ones that I definitely like the most. Zoe Kravitz plays a woman who's kind of stuck inside during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's not necessarily, like, about it, but that's kind of, like, the premise of what gets her stuck inside at the beginning of the movie. And she's working at this work-from-home tech job, like a tech support job over the phone, just talking to her Alexa. But in this, of course, it's called a Kimmy, so they can't get sued by Amazon. And she's kind of becoming attached to this Kimmy and starts to think that she may have heard a murder, because her job is to listen in. She essentially is Alexa in this world, you know. She listens into your device, and if you ask her a question that Alexa can't understand, she goes and types it in and finds the answer, and it's kind of your little personal assistant from home. And she thinks that maybe while she was working as an assistant, she heard a murder, and she starts to kind of uncover this murder and see if she can figure it out just by, like, being in her house and using the Kimmy technology to her advantage. So I thought it was a fun movie with the COVID pandemic, and kind of get how you're going to do a movie with, like, two people, three people in a really tight environment. And that was a fun thing to see kind of at the beginning of this year. So you had those movies where they were shot on that really tight budget, and this was a great one. Definitely not, like, a top five of the year movie, but a really tight thriller. If you like Steven Soderbergh's tight way of shooting, his kind of flying through the hallways kind of shooting, it's a really fun, thrilling watch.
All right, yeah. So how are we feeling about HBO Max as a whole? I felt like if you don't watch the news, you're thinking HBO Max is crushing it. If you're not paying attention to any kind of entertainment news, HBO Max is crushing it. They dropped House of the Dragon. They have a lot of DC content if you're a DC fan. Like, I think just based purely on their content and their drops, they've done really well this year. But it just seems like, are they going to exist in 3 months? Are they going to dissolve into Discovery Plus? Is Discovery Plus going to dissolve into them? Are they both going to stop existing and they're going to create a third platform that's the combination of both of them? Like, what's going to happen? Because I think, like, if we said user interface, content, everything, to me, in my opinion, they're the best platform.
Yeah, for me, they're easily the best platform in terms of backlog, too. They have such an insane quality control in their backlog. Like, when the Sight and Sound list came out this year for, like, critics and directors across, like, the whole globe voted for what they consider to be the most, like, academically important or best movies of all time. You can contest that a little bit, but the point is that HBO Max, compared to all the others, was a mile above in terms of having those movies, you know? Amazon Prime had, like, two. Netflix didn't have any. So if you're looking for quality, HBO Max has the quality. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like I'm too plugged in, because if I was just sitting here as a fan, I'd be like, man, HBO Max, they have it all. You know, they're giving me everything I could ask for. But yeah, watching the news, it feels like it's teetering on the edge of collapse. And especially, like, even if you're not watching the news, like, what if you're in the middle of a Westworld binge and you go to type in Westworld on HBO Max and all of a sudden it's gone, you know? No. What if you're watching a couple of... That's something that I think is hitting the average consumer, you know? They're not following who's buying who, what company owns who, who's in charge of what, you know? Who's now the DC president? Nobody cares about that in terms of the real people. But I think the real people will care when all of a sudden their movies and their shows are gone from the platform, you know? So I think that's something they got to be careful about.
Yeah, as long as I can remember, Die Hard has been on HBO Max. I didn't even go to think about it until we went to do our best Christmas movies on streaming. I'm like, okay, marketing, Die Hard, number one. And then I discovered it's not on HBO Max anymore, probably because they didn't feel the need to keep it on their platform. Luckily, I have it on DVD. It's not that big a deal. I can still watch it. But the fact that I believe it's a Warner Brothers movie, and the movie, like, you can debate, oh, is it a Christmas movie? If it's not, but there's still a talk around it. And the fact that you can't go watch it on streaming is astounding to me. That even if they don't have it on their platform, the fact that they're not, like, selling it off to Amazon Prime or selling it off to Netflix or selling it off to Hulu or Disney Plus or anywhere else to put on their platform is crazy to me.
Yeah, I think it's strange. And I hope that HBO Max, when they go through this rebranding, I wouldn't be surprised if by the time we do our 2023 in review, HBO Max is no more as we know it, you know.
No.
I could see it by the end of the next year becoming a whole new thing, and I hope it still maintains that quality, because that's something I love about HBO Max is whenever I want to watch a movie, that's the first place that I go to is HBO Max, and I don't want to lose that, you know. I don't want it to just be another one of those, we give you some dribble that you kind of like, but never really think about again, you know.
All right, ready to move on to our next streaming service?
I got you. Where are we going?
All right, moving from H to A, we're going to Amazon Prime. I think we can almost talk about the streaming service as a whole before we get to our two individual, because the one is a show I haven't watched that I've only heard good things about that I want to watch. And I don't know if you watched what's on your list, but I think we're both in agreement. If Amazon Prime didn't have, like, Prime shipping and the whole main Amazon side to it, I could not even make a case for a single person to have the Amazon Prime streaming service. Like, there's nothing really there. We are looking for scraps when it comes for things to talk about on Amazon Prime every week, just because, okay, they had Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. They have shows, but unlike all of the other platforms that have two shows at least running pretty much all year, like, at least Netflix, they kind of do drops, but it's like they constantly have content coming out, where Amazon Prime feels like they'll have a season of the show, wait 2 months, have a season of another show, wait another 2 months, have a season of another show, like, what's the two superhero shows?
You got The Boys.
The Boys is like their big show. And then Invincible. Invincible, there we go. Like, Invincible was a show that people talked about, and it was popular for while it's on, but you don't really hear people talk about it anymore. But if you were talking to people like, what's a show on Amazon Prime that you like, I feel like everyone that watches a show on Amazon Prime is going to say The Boys, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an issue. I love The Boys, but if I wasn't getting the whole package, I would be okay. I'm gonna sign up when The Boys comes on, or when Lord of the Rings comes back, and then I'm gonna cancel again. And if they have the money, they're putting the money into these productions. Like The Boys, it's a huge production budget. It looks great. Lord of the Rings, of course, looks incredible. They need to actually be more consistent. And I think that they're having almost an opposite issue of Disney Plus, where Amazon Prime is trying to be like quality over quantity. Sometimes at the cost of value, you know, like you're getting two or three like banger shows every year, but that gap is really hurting. You know, they got to be able to fill you in with some good stuff. They got to get something like a really strong IP they can just kind of keep running with. You know, I think what helps Disney is they have Marvel and they have Star Wars. They can bounce back and forth between essentially Marvel and Star Wars show every few months and keep you hooked for one or the other. Yeah. And Amazon needs to get something like that. They have Lord of the Rings, but that's not something that they're like constantly hitting you with. I don't think that they.
And I would also argue in 2022, 2023, Game of Thrones is a bigger IP than Lord of the Rings. That's an IP. If you went out into the streets and said, we have a new show coming out, one from the world of Game of Thrones, one from the world of Lord of the Rings, what would you rather watch? I'm gonna guess 80% of the people that are interested in one of those shows are gonna say Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I agree, and I think HBO Max is showing like that the quality of House of the Dragon is just so it's great. You know, we talked about it to death, but yeah.
All right, so I mean, we can talk about the shows. Like I said, so the show I was referencing earlier was Reacher, starring Alan Ritchson, who people may remember as playing Aquaman in Smallville. He also played Thad Castle in Blue Mountain State. He was also on the DC show Titans. for a while, but it's based on a series of books. Everything I've heard about the show, the people that read the books love it. They think it's a lot more faithful adaptation than the Tom Cruise movies. Alan Ritchson, not the greatest, like not the most perfect representation of Jack Reacher from the books, but a lot closer to it than Tom Cruise is. And definitely one I'm really want to check out when I get the opportunity. Maybe when I have a few days off during kind of Christmas break, I'll check that out, and also check out a show on Apple TV that I don't know if we're necessarily going to get to Apple TV as much to talk about, because they, like Amazon, don't have a lot of drops, and that is Ted Lasso. But yeah, Jack Reacher. And then one thing you wanted to bring up for Amazon Prime was The Devil's Hour.
Yeah, for Jack Reacher, all I really know about that show so far is that that main guy is getting fan casted for like so many different things, you know. So I think maybe Reacher could be one of that small, one of those small little hits that maybe we don't necessarily pick up on. But behind the scenes, I wonder if that show is doing really well, because they're putting it out on 4K and Blu-ray and all that stuff. They're really pushing it as like, here's our big show on Amazon. So I could see that being a big hit, especially going into season two.
Yeah. You go. One IP that to talk about Amazon Prime, one IP that Amazon has that we don't talk about, and you want to talk about a franchise that likes to follow the trends and do what the trends are doing, and that's a shared universe across platforms, whether it's movie and television, and that's James Bond. Like, we could easily see the next reboot of James Bond, we could see a Q show or an M show or an MI6 show that takes place in the same universe or the same world as the next Bond, and I think that could be very interesting.
Yeah, I would really love that. I think as like a spy thriller show is something we really need. Like, I was watching Andor, I kind of got that spy fix, you know, but it still has that sci-fi action edge. You know, I want to see something like a Man from U.N.C.L.E., you know?
Yeah.
Give me some spy thriller.
Can you imagine season two of Andor wraps and Amazon Prime, Jeff Bezos himself goes up to Tony Garori and they say, we're not going to put James Bond on television, but we want you to do a 006 show in the same universe as our next James Bond movies.
They've got my membership, Joe. Annual membership. Take it all, Amazon. Go for it.
All right. And I think that kind of wraps up Amazon. We talked pretty much everything we need to. It's not been the biggest platform. And if you're not getting stuff shipped to your house and you have Amazon Prime, for the streaming service up side of it, I would say just cancel it. You don't need it. There's nothing there, really.
I do want to recommend a show I watched really quick.
Okay.
I filled in a gap for The Devil's Hour. This is something that had been sitting on my watch list, a show that came out this year on Amazon Prime. On my watch list, because the main character is played by Peter Capaldi, who was on Doctor Who for plenty of years, and it's also produced by Stephen Moffat, who showran Doctor Who for plenty of years, and also Sherlock. So it has a couple of my Doctor Who alumni on there. And this follows a woman who is a social worker, and she kind of deals with these nightmares and these visions. She's kind of haunted by night terrors every night, and of these vicious murders, you know, and she feels connected to these murders as if she's kind of tied to the murderer, somehow tied to the victim. Similar setup to like Malignant, if you watch Malignant, not to the level of extreme as Malignant, but it's a similar premise where she's having these nightmares of visions, these very strange visions and sequences and terrifying imagery. But it all ties around Peter Capaldi as this locked up killer who is connected to the visions, and she's in prison, but she kind of goes and starts this relationship with him and talking to him in his interviews. And it's almost like a Hannibal Lecter relationship where he's kind of taunting her and playing with her, and he seems like he's a couple steps ahead of her, you know, and he has this sci-fi edge to him. And I like the show because it slowly builds up that sci-fi, it slowly builds up that mystery of what are these visions, how do they tie to this guy. And it starts off as this really small thriller and kind of gets bigger and bigger. So it just got picked up for season 2 and 3, so a double season renewal is pretty good. So that's something to keep me signed up for Amazon Prime. We got 2 more seasons of this coming up.
All right, awesome. Yeah. And so with that, we move over to Netflix, and a show I just discovered like 3 or 4 days ago that came out, I think, back in February, but they released a Christmas special, and that's Murderville, starring Will Arnett. If you're a fan of kind of improv comedy and improv, like that style of comedy, I would definitely check out Murderville. Essentially, the premise of the show is Will Arnett, who people would know from SNL. He's also the voice of Lego Batman. He's kind of been around in comedy for a long time now at this point. Plays a detective named Terry Seattle. And they have a special guest star every week. And every single person on the show knows the script for the crime or for the episode, except the special guest star. And so they're just kind of going around, trying to figure out what's going on. And they interview three suspects. And basically, every episode starts, they find the body. They're giving multiple clues about who the killer could be based on, like, the room they're in. And then they go and interview three suspects. And Will Arnett kind of puts the special guest star in situations to be funny. He's like, oh, we're going undercover. To go undercover, you got to walk with a limp. Okay, now shake your head side to side. And just different things that's funny. And then as they're interviewing the three suspects, who are people you're going to... If you've watched shows like Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Office, you're going to recognize a lot of these suspects because it's going to be people who are guest stars on those episodes. And, you know, if you know who the Upright Citizens Brigade are, you're going to recognize people who are suspects on the show. And the suspects are going to say something or do something or reveal something that could connect to one of the clues. And at the end of the episode, the special guest star has to guess which one was the murderer. And then it's revealed whether they were right or wrong. So it's a little bit of a game show, a little bit stand-up comedy. But some of the special guest stars, you have Conan O'Brien, Kumail Nanjiani, Ken Jeong, Marshawn Lynch. I'm blanking on her name, but it's the daughter from Schitt's Creek. Was Annie Murphy. That's her name. Annie Murphy was a guest. I believe there are six episodes plus the Christmas special. Jason Bateman was the main guest star for the Christmas special. They also had appearances by Maya Rudolph and Pete Davidson in the Christmas special as well. And I started with the Christmas special because I didn't really watch the show. I didn't know what the show was. I just saw the Christmas special pop up, and I saw Will Arnett and Jason Bateman. And my girlfriend, now fiance, is the one that put it on. And she's like, oh, like, let's watch this. Let's see what this is about. And we watched that, and we're like, this is a great concept. And we watched, like, the first three episodes. So this, to me, is perfect. If you're talking most underrated of 2022, I had no idea this show really existed. And it's been out for almost 8-9 months. So if you like anything I said, definitely check out Murderville on Netflix.
Yeah, definitely putting on the radar. It sounds like something I'd have a blast with. Yeah. I went in a different direction for my pick. It's something that did get some talking for sure, but I think it got a lot of negative talk, and that's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is kind of like a sequel reboot thing to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it has an average of 2 out of 5 on Letterboxd right now, so not exactly a beloved, but I thought this was a really, really fun blast of a slasher. Like, it's so gory and it's so brutal. And it feels tongue-in-cheek the entire time. Like, people will watch this and say, like, oh, it's just a bunch of people getting killed. But I feel like, you know, that's what they're going for here. They're going for the fun of just watching people get killed and watching ridiculous characters, unlikable characters, having to come up against, like, this brutal force of nature, which is Leatherface. And I think there's some themes that are kind of interesting. I think there's some characterization that actually kind of works here. But it's kind of just fun and comedic, and to me it feels like it's making fun in a lot of ways of the revival craze. Like, we're gonna bring the main character back and they're gonna be so badass and cool, they're just gonna like fight the bad guy one-on-one, and this kind of takes that and like subverts it pretty directly in a really fun way. And I think this was a pretty fun blast, and if you got turned away by the negative reviews, give it a shot. You might have a good time, especially if you want to get some neon blood-soaked craziness going on going into the holiday season. You know, nothing brings you together the holiday spirit like a bunch of murder, you know, and mayhem.
All right, hell yeah, who doesn't love murder and mayhem? All right, and then another show I watched this a few months ago. I don't even know if I watched it before or after we started doing the show. I don't even know if I've talked about it on this show, and that's a game show hosted by Howie Mandel called Bullshit, and this also on Netflix. Basically, it's kind of your standard trivia game show. Howie Mandel asks one person trivia questions, However, there are also three people off to the side simultaneously playing, and so the question could be, who was the second president of the United States? And if you know, you just say John Adams. They say you're correct, and the other three contestants try to guess if you're right or wrong. But if you don't know the answer, the goal is to make it sound like you know the answer, and you explain why you know the answer. You could be like, oh, it's Thomas Jefferson. That's why they put him on the $2 bill. He was the second president, blah, blah, blah. And if the other three people, all you need is one of them to believe you. If they say, yeah, that's the right answer, you were right, you move on. If they all say, that's bullshit and you're wrong, then you're eliminated. And whoever of those three was aligned with the truth of the highest percent takes your spot, and they bring in a new person to be one of the three. So it's kind of an interesting concept, fun concept, that it not only matters if you're right or wrong, but also how well you can convince people of you being right. So it's kind of a fun concept. I don't know if we're going to get a season two. I think it came out quite a while ago, and I haven't heard any news on a season two, but I didn't see much promotion for the show. But I thought it was a fun, entertaining show. If you're like a trivia show, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Jeopardy, anything like that, definitely try out Bullshit.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Fibbage on Jackbox games, or Bolted Dash, if you play the board game version of that, where it's like part of the game is just trying to act like you know what you're talking about and convince somebody around you that you actually know what you're talking about when you're just making it up. So yeah. I definitely will have fun with that, because I have fun with those games. I'm always a little too good at those. You know, I'm always good at pulling out the bullshit. So I think I like the show.
All right. And you also watched Apollo 10 and a half on Netflix.
I watched, this came out a while ago, but I thought it was something that perfectly fit the premise here of the episode. It's directed by Richard Linklater, and it's an animated movie about a kid reminiscing about the moon landing and watching the moon landing as a kid, and kind of like the nostalgia that filled him with of like what we could be capable of technology wise and it also weaves in like this fantasy of a little kid dreaming that he also got to go to the moon, like what would it be like if I got to go to the moon when I was growing up. So it has this kind of nostalgic longing looking back. That's something Richard Linklater, I think, captures so well, is like that nostalgic longing for youth. And I think this has that nostalgic longing. A lot of cool visuals, a lot of fun, like kind of trippy sequences. Richard Linklater has worked sometimes in animation before, but I think this is his best animated movie that I've seen from him. So I recommend it for sure. You have casts like Zachary Levi and Jack Black in there, so there's some recognizable voices for sure. And if it sounds like a fun story, I definitely recommend it. It's something that I've seen pop up here and there on people's like favorite lists of the year, but it seems like it's one that is kind of falling under the radar for a lot of people.
All right, yeah, and sounds interesting, sounds fun. And another movie I watched on Netflix was Do Revenge. It's been a while since I watched it, so I don't fully remember it, but I feel like it's one of those movies that you're going to watch in 10, like you could go back and watch 10, 15 years from now and be like, oh, this movie was stacked with A-list, like people who became A-listers, like Maya Hawke was in it, who's the daughter of Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke. And I just think it's like your classic kind of high school revenge movie. You know, it's probably aimed more at the high school college crowd, but I thought it was really well done, kind of fun. And if you're into that type of movie, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it as well. I watched it back when it came out, and I had a good time with it. You also got Sarah Michelle Gellar showing up, a rare on-screen appearance from a classic actress. So check it out for the nostalgia there. And yeah, Maya Hawke is becoming like the Netflix it girl right now. You know, she's leading Stranger Things and Fear Street. She was in Fear Street. She's got a couple of deals going on. So I could see her being kind of a big, big breakout, like Jenna Ortega kind of hit star.
Yeah, for sure. And you even got someone who I think could be a big name. He was on This Is Us. He was in Euphoria. And that's Austin Abrams, I feel like, could make a name for himself in a few years.
Yeah, Netflix, I think, for all its flaws, is doing a really interesting job of like getting a lot of really young actors and actresses into like these roles like this. A lot of like Gen Z actors and actresses. So it's going to be really curious to see who of these people actually take off that Netflix is platforming. One movie that I watched is Windfall. This is one that I think definitely flew under the radar. It stars Jason Segel, Lily Collins and Jesse Plemons. As Jesse Plemons plays this kind of egotistical tech billionaire, and Lily Collins is his wife. They live in this kind of exotic resort out in the middle of the woods, this huge fancy, you know, millionaire retreat, their own little glass onion out there, and they have this fancy perfect life. And Jason Segel decides that while they're out, he's going to break into the house and just, you know, walk around, see what it's like to be in this rich man's house and see what this rich person's life is really like. And then while he's in the house, the couple decides to come home, and it spirals out into this like accidental kidnapping where he's like, I kind of got to kidnap you because like you're going to call the police if I don't kidnap you. So like I've got to tie you up. How else am I going to get out of this? So you have like this awkward conflict. And I think it's really fun because all these actors play like that awkwardness where there's that elephant in the room they don't want to talk about. And they're almost starting to bond a little bit. Like Jason Segel and Jesse Plemons like starting to bond as these odd, totally different characters from different lives. You start to see the connections that Lily Collins is maybe unfulfilled in her relationship with Jesse Plemons and starts to maybe look at Jason Segel and see what her life could be like if she walked away from all this rich and all this fame. I think it was a really fun, kind of strange, slow thriller. Like it seems like a home invasion thriller, but it's played so quiet and so soft that it's just kind of like this hangout vibe movie that starts as a home invasion. So I had a good time with it. It shot really well, a cool score, and some fun performances. So if you like the actors especially, I recommend it for sure.
All right, yeah. Definitely sounds something that might be up my alley. I like kind of a fun hangout movie. So definitely will check that out. Anything else you got to say about Netflix before we kind of talk about Netflix as a whole in the year?
No, I think we can move on to Netflix as a whole for sure. They've had an interesting year. I think they've had a bit of a comeback year because I thought that Netflix, especially in the movie department, has been really dropping the ball, dropping some just straight up garbage, you know, and they dropped some garbage this year too. But I think they've had a nice couple of surprises. You talked about a good amount of them here, but even stuff like 1899 that I watched recently and reviewed, I thought was a really good surprise from Netflix. So they're keeping my subscription. They are one of, if not the most expensive platform out there. Like if you're paying for the maximum Netflix membership, you're paying $20 a month, you know, and that's $240 a year. That's kind of expensive, you know, but I feel like I'm personally getting my money's worth. I don't go to Netflix first and foremost of my platforms, but it's one of the solid backups that always usually has something on there that's worth popping on. So I don't know if it's worth $20 a month, but it's one of the better ones. So I'm curious if I might drop down my plan. Do I really need 4K on Netflix? Can I drop down to the 1080p? You know, maybe save myself a few bucks a month, it might be worth it.
Yeah. Like with my girlfriend and I and our taste of trashy reality television, you know, between The Circle, Love is Blind, The Ultimatum, Too Hot to Handle, they always got something for me on there. So I think it's going to be a long time before I drop Netflix. I think they kind of know their wheelhouse. They know their demographic. They're the standard bearer, you know, like there's always going to be Netflix. I feel like even if Netflix, as we know it, changes, I think the name will remain because somebody will want to buy it strictly for the name.
I think Netflix is kind of like the Kleenex of streaming, you know, like when you say, oh, I'm going to go to the Kleenex, you say, oh, I'm going to go maybe watch some Netflix, you know, and Netflix has become kind of like synonymous with streaming, you know, and I think that, that brand's going to stick around, even if it doesn't, dominate. It's still like the, you know, the second biggest platform out there, barely being beat by Amazon Prime. So it's still kicking. It's still, even though it's the founder and the kind of the beginner of this, I'm happy it's still sitting around. You know, we'll see how long it lasts.
You don't HBO Max and chill. You don't Paramount Plus and chill. You don't Hulu and chill. You don't even Disney Plus and chill. You Netflix and chill.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix and chill. No one's gonna, you know, Hulu and hang.
Yeah, you don't Hulu and hang, you know? You don't Freevee and fuck. You Netflix and chill.
Yep.
All right, I think we kind of talked about that. There's not much to talk about. Hey, they had Stranger Things this year, one of the most popular shows, so it's always going to keep them in the spotlight, in the news, in the discussion.
And yeah, they always have one or two things where like Dahmer or Wednesday where all of a sudden it's like the biggest hit of all time and you're like, oh, okay, I guess that show hit.
Yep.
So yeah, they're the one that always pops up with some random sleeper hit that they claim to be like the biggest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's, can I be honest? I never believed those numbers when they're like, when they said Wednesday was like the biggest debut weekend of all time in streaming. I'm like, no, it's not, because there's no way that's true.
Yeah, and they're getting like really specific with their analysis too. They'd be like, oh, it's the most viewed premiere three-part streaming in the third quarter of the year of 20. It's like, okay, I guess, you know,
yeah.
you really had to find something.
There's no way more people watched Wednesday. I mean, I guess if you're talking minutes, I might buy that in like a certain amount of time because Netflix drops all their stuff at once. But if you want to say who watched season one, episode one of Wednesday, or season two, episode one of Mandalorian, and you're telling me more people watched season one, episode one of Wednesday than season two, episode one of Mandalorian, I just don't believe you, because that's not true.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where they're getting those numbers from. It's, yeah, we gotta believe Netflix, because they're the only ones who get to tell us what happens. But yeah, we'll see if there's ever a point where they have to release their actual numbers and how that compares to what they've been talking about.
Yeah, watch them like have to be the government releases the thing where you have to release your real numbers, and we realize like, oh, it's weird how once you have to release your actual numbers that like all these records stop being broken and the things are actually viewed way less than they used to be for some reason. That's odd. But to move over to Disney Plus, I will say I finished The Santa Clauses.
Tell me how it goes, Joe. Christmas cheer? You filled with joy?
Not as horrible as I thought it would be, but also I left it being like, why did they make this? Like, everything kind of ended where it started, to be honest. They kind of made me question the events of the first one. Like, it felt like they made this solely to explain the plot holes and the fan theories and everything from the first movie, but they didn't really have a story to back it up. Like, I felt like part of me
wants to... Rogue One.
Part of me wants to spoil it so I can actually talk about it, but I don't... Like, does it... Do people care if I spoil the Santa Clauses at that point?
I have to imagine no, because I don't care. But if you care about Santa Claus spoilers, maybe mute yourself for another 30 seconds or so.
Yeah, maybe a minute. I got a little bit to talk about here. So basically, the premise of the show is Scott Calvin, a.k.a. Santa Claus, a.k.a. Tim Allen, is like, I don't really want to be Santa Claus no more. Like, I'm just bored of it. Like, I just don't want to do it anymore. Like, Christmas cheer is just not here for me anymore. I got these two kids, his daughter in the show, played by Tim Allen's actual daughter, which that was cool. But his wife was, like, questioning being Mrs. Claus. She wanted to know who was the Mrs. Claus before her. All this kind of things. The kids were, like, daydreaming of, like, the boringness and monotony of life outside of the North Pole. They just didn't want to like live in the North Pole anymore, and so he was decided, you know what, I'm gonna retire from Santa, I'm gonna find my next Santa. And like, we saw that clip in one of the trailers, or like a preview of Peyton Manning auditioning to be Santa, and like, you and I speculated, oh, it's gonna be a whole montage of like famous people and other people auditioning to be Santa. Not the case. Peyton Manning, the only person they brought in, so that was disappointing. And then they're like, it's going to be this Cal Penn guy. There wasn't really much beyond that. It's like, you could just tell they wanted it to be him, and the show didn't go through any extra effort of like, oh, let's have this big worldwide search. You could just feel, oh, it's going to be Cal Penn. At first, I thought he was going to be the main character of the show, but he essentially was this guy that they felt like they wanted to make like Jeff Bezos, but also his company failed, but also he's supposed to be this tech genius. It's like they wanted the best of both worlds, and it didn't really land for me because it didn't really make sense. But his wife had died a few years earlier, and he has this daughter. And then he sees the magic and how Santa's able, and there's all these portals around the world, and that's how Santa's able to travel all over the world. And he becomes the next Santa, but the coat disappears, it vanishes. He's never able to put the coat on. And he, this whole year, he's operating as Santa. And he decides to start this new thing of Christmas every day. You shouldn't have Christmas once a day. And so, like, these drones, you send a letter to Santa saying, I want this. And as soon as you put it in the mailbox, or, you know, you make your wish to Santa, a drone appears giving you exactly what you wish for. And it destroys the Christmas spirit. And Scott Calvin and Santa and his family realizes they like life in the North Pole. And they go back and they fight Cal Penn. And he becomes Santa again.
They fight him?
Not fight him, but, like, there's a standoff. Oh. And a whole thing, and Santa goes to the Yuleverse, man.
Oh, he goes to the Yuleverse. What does that look like?
He just transports and sees all these different Santas. There's another thing I didn't understand. So all the previous Santas were magical beings. Supposedly Scott Calvin was the first human chosen to be Santa, according to this show. And the previous Santa was played by Jim O'Hare, who people may remember as Jerry from Parks and Rec. He was the previous Santa, and he decided that he wanted to retire, and he realized there needed to be a change in the whole Santa thing, and he decided that the next Santa should be human and will be the first ever human Santa. And that all of the clauses that we thought were like, oh, this is what's happened to every previous Santa. No, turns out, who was the head elf in the first? Bernard. Bernard is the one that wrote all of the clauses to guide Scott Calvin into being Santa, which in turn almost makes it feel weird and like goes against like the stuff in the second and third one of why are they like discovering this if these were supposed to be things to help him and guide him in his Santa-ness. But yeah, I'm gonna be honest, if you're like a massive Santa Claus fan, massive Tim Allen fan, sure, watch it. I guess it's weird, it doesn't fully make sense, it doesn't land like I thought it could have. But if you're not, you're not really missing anything. But it's not horrible enough to ruin the first movies, but it's not good enough that I'm saying, like, oh, you need to watch these if you like that first Santa Claus movie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great to me, Joe. All that lore dumping, you know, I'm like, why? What is this? You can't just have Santa, like, save Christmas, you know? Yeah. Fight some evil Santa or something. Go to the Yuleverse and come up like a foil, like an evil Tim Allen. You know, could bring in... You could bring in Tom Hanks to play like an evil Santa. You know, I could see that.
But also Santa versus now Santa. They greenlit it for a season two, and like I legitimately thought when this show started, it was gonna end with Tim Allen retiring as Santa Claus, Cal Penn taking over, and he's gonna be the new Santa. And then I saw that they announced season two, and it's gonna be starring Tim Allen. I saw that the final episode had already dropped. I just hadn't watched it yet, and I'm just like, well, then what the hell's the point in this show? Like, and that's kind of what I left, is it kind of brought it back to where it started, and I'm like, so Santa Claus just went from I want to retire to like, nah, I guess I'm just gonna keep being Santa, it's not that bad.
It sounds like a really compelling show, Joe. Can't wait to see what season two brings.
You know
what,
I changed, just don't watch it. I'm gonna be honest, just don't watch it. No matter, just don't watch it. That's fine.
I won't.
That's adequate. Yeah. It's an adequate show. Alright, I've talked too much about this nonsense. Let's talk about a show I want to say is underrated. And you might say, Joe, this is a part of a big IP. This is a big property. This character is going to be in a movie soon. And that's Ms. Marvel. It's a show, all these Marvel shows have come out. People talk about it. But I felt like Ms. Marvel never got the love that it was owed. Because in my opinion, did Loki come out this year? Yeah, Loki was this year.
I think Loki may have been last year. We'll have to check before our award show next week, because that might be a contender for some awards, you know.
But if Loki came out last year, Ms. Marvel, in my opinion, was the best Marvel show. If Loki was this year, it's the second best Marvel show.
Loki premiered June 9th, 2021, so I don't believe it made it to this year.
Yeah, so Ms. Marvel, best Marvel show this year. And I feel like as soon as it dropped, it didn't really get that many viewers. And as soon as it was over, no one was really talking about it. And I think... overall, just the best show. Best Marvel show, anyways.
I'm also going to talk about a Marvel show that I thought was underrated. Because I do agree that Ms. Marvel I thought was great and not necessarily is talked about as some of the more plotty Marvel shows. So if you missed it, check it out. But one that I think you should check out if you missed it is She-Hulk. I thought this, to me, was maybe the best Marvel show of this year. I thought it was really funny. And to me, this is exactly what I'm kind of looking for out of these Marvel shows. It's not perfect, but it's like starting towards a direction that I really like, where it's just... here's the character that got their powers. They're like solving random things, you know. We're gonna have She-Hulk go up against this character this week. We're gonna have She-Hulk go up against the other character this week. And I think Marvel is bogged down sometimes on these shows by having it feel like they're dragging out one plot for the whole season, and they're gonna like really give you beat for beat for beat this plot. And I think some of the fun of superhero movies is, or superhero comics, is just like they're gonna fight some random guy for an episode. He's gonna have like electric powers or whatever. He's gonna be a magician. He's gonna have like a, you know, whole magician crew that hangs out with him, and She-Hulk's gonna have to like sue him and prove that he's like stealing magic from from Wong. I think that's like a really cool, you know, just throw her into some premise. And I think that's what's fun with She-Hulk. And yeah, the finale, we talked about the finale, but the finale goes so meta and so goofy and so fun. I can't wait to see it where they go with season two, because I'm sure they're going to go for like a bigger, even more meta, even more like Deadpool kind of take. So I'm really looking forward to what season two is. And yeah, this for me is the best Marvel show of the year and super underrated, because it got a lot of hate, especially online. People were like insisting that the show was terrible because a couple of the jokes weren't that good, or like some of the CG didn't look great. But I thought as an actual like structured episode show, I had a great time watching it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I definitely like She-Hulk more than I thought it did. And the finale, I thought, was one of the better MCU show finales, in my opinion.
Yeah, you got another one up, PJ. You have a long list of Disney Plus shows here. So
I don't really. It's more pick? Just shows with long titles. I only have two more. So the next one is a movie, one we talked about when it came out, and one that, again, I don't feel it got the love it deserved, and that's Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers. It's a fun, you know, I would put it, you know, maybe this is blasphemy. Maybe this is a crazy take. I'd put it on the same level as Who Framed Roger Rabbit. If someone came to me and said, honestly, I watched them both back to back and I like Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers better, I'm not going to debate them. I'm not going to argue them. I can see that take. I feel like it's a lot more modern, and I feel like potentially the pop culture references 5-10 years from now might not hold up the same, because I feel like Who Framed Roger Rabbits are more universal. But as it stands right now, I think it's on that level. I think it's a really well-made thought, like a lot of thought went into it type of movie, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I had a great time with this. It's way better than it ever had any right to be, and especially for something that's just literally going to take a bunch of IP that you know and shove them at you in all these different ways. But it doesn't feel like that's the point. It feels like all of the cameos and all of the other characters are there as like filling in the world and set dressing and kind of like the background details that are there to make it fun to rewatch and to pick out the characters you recognize. And yeah, sure, some of it won't age perfectly, I'm sure, but there's so much in there that I'm sure there's at least a couple of things that are going to hit no matter what IPs you're a fan of, no matter what you connect to. There's a handful of this great surprises along the way, so I definitely recommend checking it out, especially if it's something that missed your radar because you were like, oh, it's going to be a bunch of like member very nostalgia cameos, and it kind of is that, but it has fun with it and kind of like brings that into the plot in a way too, and kind of comments on that in the plot.
Yeah, for sure. And something else I watched this year was the TV show Proud Family, Louder and Prouder. It's a continuation of the Proud Family TV series, Disney Channel series from the mid-2000s. And I feel like they didn't really miss a beat. It felt like obviously now they have modern technology. They don't really address it much that, oh yeah, like now we have cell phones and stuff. Penny's only a year older, but now it's obviously clear they were living in 2006 and now they're living in 2022. But it's an animated show. I really don't care. It's not that big a deal. But yeah, if you like the Proud Family growing up, maybe you watched it when you're a kid and now you have kids of your own. And I felt like it, especially dealing with the social issues that Proud Family dealt with. Proud Family, Louder and Prouder is the same way. And, you know, it's a kind of a fun for the whole family type of animated show. And one that if you're looking for something for your kids to watch that doesn't make you want to gouge your eyes out with a spoon, Proud Family, Louder and Prouder is the way to go.
I liked it for sure. I didn't keep up with it, but the first couple episodes that I watched, I had a good time with for sure.
All right, and I believe you watched Fire of Love as well on Disney Plus.
Yeah, Fire of Love is something I mentioned a little bit before, but I think if we're talking underrated stuff, this is one that I think dropped under the radar and kind of fell among all the random National Geographic documentaries that Netflix has on there. But this was way better than any of those. It's very personal. It follows this married couple who are volcano studyists, volcanologists, I think you'd call them or something. They're life goal and their passion is to study volcanoes and to go to like the very peaks of volcanoes and to look over into the lava, and they spend a lot of the time filming themselves doing it. They have a little handheld camera and captured a bunch of, you know, almost candid shots of themselves as a couple out doing this like romantic diving into volcanoes. So if you like crazy nature imagery, just jaw-dropping stuff, and from angles you would never get to see ever in real life. It's not the big drone shots necessarily. It's like you're right there, you're on it, And it also has the personal journey of this couple and their passionate connection to volcanoes. And like, was that dangerous? Did that ruin their lives? You know, did that kill them ultimately? And I think that it's a question they don't really answer, but they bring it up a lot, and they want you to kind of think about that while engaging with this gorgeous, jaw-dropping visual spectacle. And it's like, was being there and experiencing that worth giving up all of your life for it? And I wonder how you feel. So check it out and watch it and see what you think.
All right. So how are we feeling about Disney Plus as a whole? I feel like you kind of alluded to with Amazon that it definitely feels like they're more quality over quantity at times. But especially with reports I'm hearing, especially with some of their reactions to a lot of the Star Wars shows, I do wonder how much of that is kind of the timing of filming and when everything happened. Because you look at Andor and you don't really say like, oh, the quality suffered on that show. But I feel like a lot of that was a little bit more post-pandemic when restrictions were lessened. And that's kind of how Kenobi was supposed to look, and then there was a big spike right as filming starting, so it kind of completely changed everything right as it started. So I'm very curious to see how things look moving forward. I do feel like a lot of the Marvel shows, especially the big fight scenes, can almost feel a little Disney Channel-ish at times. But the one thing I will say Disney Plus does very well is documentaries. I have yet to see too many documentaries that I feel like miss. They may not be a topic I'm that interested in, but I feel like they're all well made.
Yeah, I feel pretty solid about Disney Plus. I think what you said, though, is what's very important. I think they have to step up the production quality next year, especially like going into Ahsoka and stuff that I feel demands a lot of like visual style and more ambition than we've been getting out of a lot of the Disney Plus shows. And you can say, oh, it's COVID, it's this and that, but I've seen stuff shot in COVID that looks incredible, you know, and I think the general audience doesn't really care if it was shot in COVID, if it was shot when or where it was shot. They just care that it doesn't look that good. And there's only so many times Disney can pull that off. I think the general opinion on Marvel was really, really positive coming out of Endgame. But I think the fact that Disney Plus has been milking that IP so much has already kind of started to turn the pop culture mind slowly against Marvel. I think they got to be careful not to oversaturate. So, yeah, I think having something that people talk about because it's good, what they got to do, you know, not talk about because of the camera, not talk about because of, you know, some connection to the MCU plot. They got to have something like, this is so well produced, this is so cool, and this is so unique. I think something like WandaVision, whether you liked it or hated it, started a conversation. It was a huge hit for Disney Plus because people were like, oh my god, this is not what I expected, you know. And I think every Disney Plus show so far has been exactly what I expected, and they got to surprise me a little bit next year.
Yeah, I feel like the perfect model for Marvel, for Disney Plus, and for the movies is do 2 movies a year and 2 shows a year and maybe throw in a special like Werewolf by Night. And I feel like the market wouldn't be too oversaturated. And for Star Wars, I feel like 2 live-action shows a year, 1 animated show a year, and a movie every other year. And that'll keep people satiated without feeling like you're constantly inundated with Star Wars at all times.
Yeah, I'm excited for next year because they have Doctor Who coming up next year.
Yeah,
so
they do.
I love Doctor Who, and I think that'll diversify their lineup a lot. So that's one of my most anticipated streaming releases of the whole year, and Disney Plus has got that and a bunch of other anticipated drops. So I could see 2023 being a huge year for Disney Plus, especially for people who are like, I'm into Marvel, but they haven't really given me anything big or substantial to chew on in a while. I think they're going to give us some good stuff.
Yeah. All right. You ready to move on to Hulu?
Let's go to Hulu, Joe.
All right. For Hulu, one of my most underrated shows of the year is a show my girlfriend and I first bonded over, and that's the Hilary Duff starring How I Met Your Father, a show, a spinoff kind of How I Met Your Mother. It exists in the same world. I didn't have very high expectations for it, especially the first episode was a little rocky, but I think it found its own groove, and I think especially the different dynamic of the show where you know throughout the whole show of How I Met Your Mother that you're probably not even going to meet the mother until the final season, where with How I Met Your Father, you know it's like 1 of 5 guys and it's just which guy is it, I think the change in dynamic is fun, but it still kind of feels like How I Met Your Father. And season 2 is coming out later in January of next year, and I'm definitely excited for it. I think it's, if you're a How I Met Your Mother fan, if you're a fan of that style of sitcom, definitely check out How I Met Your Father for Hulu.
I'll definitely catch up on that before the new season drops, because I watched the first episode and I thought it was already didn't really catch me, but the fact that you said it was as good is going to get me, because I loved How I Met Your Mother, and even though the finale didn't necessarily like end great, I feel like it still as a whole series holds up together really well. Yeah, so I'm excited to check out this season.
The alternate ending finale is so much better than the official one that they released. The alternate one that they were like contemplating is so much better. That would have, I think, still be considered an all-time show that people still watch. But I think the ending being so bad, it just killed any drive people have to watch that show. Just similar with Game of Thrones. If Game of Thrones ended stronger, I think people would still be talking about it and rewatching it and doing all that. But with such a weak ending, people like, well, I know where this leads, so I don't really feel the need to like watch the good seasons. But a show you watched, you've talked about a bit before on here, but Reboot.
Yeah, Reboot we talked about a little bit on here, but I wanted to mention it as we get towards the end of the year here. This is a comedy about a rebooted sitcom. You know, we've seen so many rebooted sitcoms, and this leans in to the meta of that. This woman goes to literally Hulu to pitch a reboot of a series called Step Right Up. It was an old kind of cheesy Full House style kind of sitcom, and she wants to bring all of the original cast back and have all of them reunite on the same set that they were on for the original show. So you catch up with the original cast, played by Keegan-Michael Key and Johnny Knoxville. Those are kind of the main characters on there. You also have Paul Reiser showing up for a couple of episodes as like an original writer who created the show in the first place. But yeah, it's kind of fun. You get to see these celebrities who are very washed up and down on their luck or in various different points in their careers, you know, decades after the sitcom. And for some of them, this revival is like everything, you know, it's their entire career hangs on this revival doing well. But other people, you know, they're just kind of like hanging on to life by the crazy strings, and they're doing all the drugs and they're drinking so much and not really taking this reboot seriously. And at the center of it, you have this woman who's trying to launch her TV career with this reboot and trying to rein in all of these big personalities to actually make a show that's going to be successful and be watched. So if you have some love for this reboot era or some hate for this reboot era, there's some great gags about the whole culture around reviving shows right now, and some great character work. You get to see these characters build and develop a lot over just this first season, so I'm hoping that there's going to be some more seasons of this so we can check in with the characters and see what they've got in store for the rest of it.
Yeah. All right, and one show I watched starring Elle Fanning is The Girl from Plainville. If you're a true crime fan, it's about the girl who was a big case a few years ago, about the girl who supposedly convinced her boyfriend to commit suicide. And then there was the whole thing of how much were they actually dating? How much did they know about each other? How much about it was, would he have done it anyways? Did she really kill himself, or did she really convince him to kill himself? And this, that, and the third. And it was a lot more. As someone who didn't really know much about the case, I thought it was pretty interesting. So if you're a true crime fan, you haven't checked out The Girl from Plainville, I think Elle Fanning is one of the better actors of her age. So,
Yeah, I believe she got some Emmy nominations out of that show. So she definitely got the critical acclaim as well.
Yeah, I just, from my perspective, I just never really saw anyone ever talking about it. And, I think more people should have watched it and more people should be talking about it. And, The Girl from Plainville, like I said, a good true crime show. And then to wrap up Hulu really quick. Rosalind, a movie I wanted to watch, I just never got to. How is it? Should I have watched it?
Yeah, I think this is actually a really cute, fun movie. It's something that is like very fortressing kind of movie. I love these kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of Victorian era romances. You know, I get swept up in like the Pride and the Prejudice of it all. So I love when Netflix drops these kind of romantic period pieces. I always watch them, you know, and this one is an interesting premise because it's about the woman that Romeo gives up to go after Juliet. You know, she's been left behind by Romeo. Now she's trying to find her place and figure out who she is now that her precious man Romeo has left her. And you have Catelyn Dever as the main character. If you know her from Booksmart as the kind of blonde secondary character in Booksmart. She's great in that, and she has this kind of fun, snarky energy here that I really enjoyed. She's kind of along on the game with you, you know, she's kind of like talking to you a bit, talking to you. You're in on the joke with her a little bit, and I have a good time with it. If you're a fan of like Bridgerton, this is kind of very Bridgerton, but it's much more on the comedy side much more on like the rom-com kind of side. But yeah, I had a good time with it. And if you have any interest in that fun premise, you know, of like, oh, what happened to the woman that Romeo gave up on and left, you know, at the beginning of the plot, I think they do a fun way of making that character actually develop in like a sort of like a Wicked kind of way. We're going to go back and read or watch an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet and be like, oh, I've gotten the whole story of Rosalind now on this whole other movie. So I liked it.
All right, yeah. So how are we feeling about Hulu as a whole? Because as time goes on, especially with Disney Plus adding R-rated content and having different locks and stuff, I'm like, why does Hulu exist? Disney owns most of, if not all of it. I just don't understand. And Hulu only exists in the United States. Pretty much all of the Hulu originals are on Disney Plus on a separate section. So if you go on Disney Plus, you'll have like your Marvel, National Geographic, Star Wars, Disney, and they have something called Star. And so all of the Hulu originals are under the Star brand. So I just, at this point, I'm like, does Hulu need to exist? Like, I would, like, they have kind of the Hulu, like, bundle right now, Hulu Disney bundle, where you can get Hulu Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus. But I'm almost curious, how far away are we from just a more expensive streaming service that just has the Hulu originals, Disney Plus, and you get ESPN Plus with it?
Yeah, I have 2 points. The one is that I definitely use my family's Hulu login, my parents' login, and if I didn't have my parents' login, I would not be watching Hulu. It's not something that I'd be paying for out of my own pocket. You know, I pick up a couple of movies, a couple of shows here and there, but it's not one that's earned my income, you know? But I also think it's... What was your second point then on there, Joe?
Like, why does Hulu exist? Like,
I think Disney's waiting a little bit on HBO Max to pull the trigger. I think we've seen the last couple of years that these platforms are willing to let HBO Max, like, fall on the grenade, and then they'll just, like, go and do the same thing, like, a month later, you know? Because, yeah. Like, you think about HBO Max being like, oh, we're going to have day-and-date movies on our platform, and everyone was like, how could you do this? And then a couple of weeks later, Disney Plus was like, oh, we're doing that also, actually. And Peacock was like, oh, we're doing that also, actually. So I could see them sitting back and waiting and seeing, okay, when HBO Max and Discovery and all these things collide into whatever they become, what is the fallout for that? And I think Disney could, a couple of months after that, be like, you know what, Hulu, Disney Plus, ESPN, we're just going to make it all Disney Plus. It's going to go up a couple of bucks, but you're going to get this whole all-in-one package of streaming. I'm not sure, though, because Bob Chapek, you know, it seems like he's not necessarily – he's now returned as – no, he's left as CEO. You know, Bob Iger is back, and he seemed more attached to Disney as a family brand. So I'm wondering if he might try and focus on building up Hulu as a separate entity more than Chapek was doing.
Yeah, and make Hulu more of the adult thing. Like I'm fully like when I remember when Disney Plus was announced, one of the big things they announced was a live action, or not live action, but like a 30-year-old Lizzie McGuire, and basically a continuation of the series focusing on an adult Lizzie McGuire, and it was going to be on Disney Plus. And then there was the whole thing of like, oh, the show you're making is different than the show we thought you were making, because for some reason they thought 12-year-olds would be interested in a 30-year-old Lizzie McGuire show instead of the now 30-year-olds who also grew up with the show who would not be interested. And I feel like, oh, just move it to Hulu then. But now we're getting more adult content on Disney Plus, so I'm just like, could we revive that? They had like filmed the pilot, I believe, and they were multiple shows into filming. And I don't know, I feel like that would be a quality show if you want to talk like fun for the whole family. I don't understand, like, I understand Bob Iger saying of like Disney being a family brand, but you can also put blockers on your content, and if people don't want to watch, if people want to have an account that their 4-year-old can't watch Logan or Deadpool on, then just make it so it's password protected and they can't watch the movie without entering the PIN number. It's not that hard of a concept.
Yeah, I'm curious what the future holds for Disney Plus, because Disney as a whole is at this huge turning point as a company where they could, in the next year, become all of a sudden at the bottom, not at the bottom, but trying to claw their way up. Oh, you know, they spend so much that I think their bubble could pop if they're not careful.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about Hulu as a whole. Do you want to move on to Peacock and what your kind of underrated words were there?
Yeah, let's go for Peacock. definitely let me know what you thought of Peacock, because Peacock's one that we don't talk about too much on the show, so I'm excited to actually talk about it.
I'll be honest. Here's my thoughts on Peacock. I can't even remember the last thing I watched on Peacock. That's my thoughts on Peacock. I think I get it free because I have Xfinity internet, and you get Peacock when you have Xfinity, but outside of that, I would not pay for it. I don't know what's on there. Everything I've heard about Peacock was a negative, so I don't watch it. Spoiler alert. Yeah, don't get Peacock. It's dumb.
One thing I do like about Peacock is you talk about the day and date drops, and Peacock does a great job of like getting a bunch of Universal movies on there really early, you know? So if you want to watch stuff like Nope, you want to watch stuff that like Bros or Ticket to Paradise, stuff that dropped just this year, you want to catch up on your current list, I think Peacock is the best in terms of getting you movies that just came out as recently as possible. You know, you get stuff on there like within a week of it being in a theater, it'll be on Peacock. So if you're wanting to keep up with your theater releases but you don't want to go out for various reasons to the theater, I think Peacock is worth signing up for, especially because you can do a free account. You know, you don't even have to pay for it at all, and you get a good amount of movies out of it. So I don't mind Peacock, but yeah, to me, that's what I go to Peacock for, is not necessarily Peacock originals. You know, I couldn't name me a Peacock original right now, but I go there if I want to watch like a new current movie that just came out like within a month of now.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about streaming before we move on to kind of our final topics?
How are you feeling, Joe? Do you think it was a solid year? Did you waste your money this year, or do you feel like all your hundreds of bucks spent on streaming were worth it?
Here's the thing. I do what most people do, and that's share accounts. You know, you have an account. You share your password with a couple people. You know somebody who has an account. They share your password with you. So it makes it easier. It kind of just depends on what you like. Like, if you're a big Star Trek fan, I think you need Paramount Plus. If you're not a big Star Trek fan and you don't watch Yellowstone and you don't care about those type of shows, I'm going to be out here saying I don't really think you need Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, in my opinion, doesn't offer much. We don't talk about it much. Apple TV, the only show I hear anyone have ever talked about coming out of Apple TV, only two shows, I believe, is Severance, which I haven't watched, and Ted Lasso. Only two shows, and I feel like two shows isn't a big enough reason to pay for a streaming service. I feel like if we were to talk about, hey, who's the best streaming service, I feel like it's probably going to come down to one of three: HBO Max, Netflix, or Disney Plus. Amazon Prime, like we said, if you're not getting stuff shipped to your house, don't pay for it. You don't need it. And Hulu is touch and go here and there. I'm enjoying the Chippendale show starring Camille Nanjiani right now. But most of the time, I don't personally watch Hulu. My fiance watches a lot of shows on Hulu that are more of like the reality shows that I don't care about, like Married to Medicine and The Family Karma and Winter House and Summer House and shows I don't watch. So if you're into those type of shows, yeah, probably get Hulu. So I think ultimately a lot of it comes down to what do you like.
Yeah, I think for me what's appealing about streaming is not necessarily those big huge Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu. Like, those are always going to be there, but if you really want to find something for you, don't sign up for Netflix or Amazon Prime. Go find like a Shudder or a Criterion channel, whatever suits like your specific taste. There's probably like a really niche platform out there that has like a ton of what you like on there. And I think that's something that's really cool about the current state of streaming, is stuff is slowly getting gobbled up. You know, I try to enjoy it while I can. You know, I love my Criterion membership. I get to watch all these, you know, high art things that make me feel like, you know, I'm back in film school sometimes. And I love to also go on Shudder and watch some like cheesy B horror movie. You know, I think streaming can give you your niche if you really want to dive for it, but if you're just sitting there picking up whatever the platforms are handing out to you, you're going to watch some real garbage, you know. So I think we're hitting a point where there's so many platforms that unfortunately you got to do the work to find what you like, where you want to watch it. So hopefully you watch our show, because that's the whole point of The Hand. You know, we're going to go through all these different platforms, dig out the stuff that actually is worth watching. And I think that's going to become more and more and more of a task, as every single one of these platforms is going to be trying to hit, you know, every single one's going to be dropping you a show or a movie here and there that has a couple of names you recognize and you say, hey, maybe I'll go check out, you know, Harrison Ford running around in the Wild West or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Can I have a minute to step up on my soapbox real quick?
Give me a speech, Joe.
So when Cable was king, all I saw on the internet, Twitter, Reddit, Facebook, MySpace, whatever, is like, oh, like, why do I have to pay for all these channels I don't watch? Like, I'm not a big sports fan. Why do I have to pay for ESPN and Fox Sports? Or, you know, I don't watch movies. Why do I got to pay for all these movie channels? Like, it just doesn't make sense. There should be a la carte. Well, a la carte's essentially what we have. If you're a horror fan and pretty much all you want to do is watch horror movies, you know, subscribe to Shudder and live your life. You know, if you like older kind of classic movies, you can get the Criterion streaming service, or you can get HBO Max. If you just kind of like, oh, you know, I like kind of like the fun family movies, like I watch a lot of Marvel and Star Wars, just subscribe to Disney Plus and you don't got to worry about the rest of it. All your entertainment that you care to watch is going to come at you for like $15. If you like a little bit wider variety, but you don't necessarily need anything specific, boom, Netflix. There you go. If you need to keep up to date with live TV, you know, you watch a lot of the kind of network television shows, your ABC, CBS, but you know, maybe you venture out, but cable's a little too pricey for you, boom, Hulu. Get Hulu Live, you're all set. You got the a la carte you've always wanted. You got the a la carte you've asked for the last 15 years. But now it's just all on different services, because why wouldn't it be? And now everyone's complaining, wanting it all in the same spot. But you can't have it both ways.
And yeah, I think we're hitting a point where, like, a few years ago, it was possible to be, like, subscribing to all of the major platforms, you know, when there was, like, three or four, and then maybe one or two niche ones in there somewhere. But, yeah, we're in a point where I would not be opposed to cutting the cord on a couple of these or churning my way around a couple, you know, cancel for a couple of months here and there, pick it up again. Exactly. I think that's what you got to do. And they don't want you to churn. That's why they give you so much stuff, but you got to churn. You know, you got to pick your favorites, and you got to realize that if you're not going to watch Disney Plus until Secret Invasion drops, then stop paying for Disney Plus for a couple of months. They're not going to come find you. You know, they're not going to attack you. They're not going to say, no, you can't sign up again. You know, you can sign up again. Just give it a couple of months and then come back.
There's a reason Disney Plus has a Marvel show that they'll run, and then about 3 weeks, not quite a month later, before that Marvel show ends, or after that Marvel show ends, they'll do a Disney Plus show. And then right around the 3 weeks, not quite a month mark, after that Star Wars show ends, a Marvel show will start. And they just keep having that pattern. And you can kind of gauge when the next show is going to start, because they don't want you to have more than a month gap in between shows that you want to watch, causing you to cancel.
And it's that's the game, Joe. They're just playing us. And here we are watching it all.
Yep. And they know, hey, we have a bunch of Christmas. We have more Christmas movies than all of the other platforms. I mean, Netflix has kind of more Christmas movies, but they're all kind of the same Christmas movie, where Disney Plus has a wider variety. So they're like, we don't have to drop anything in December, because no one's going to drop us in December, because if they want to watch Home Alone and all these other Christmas movies, they got to come to us anyway. So that's kind of why I figured out that Disney didn't drop anything big in December, because they didn't need to. But yeah, I think we have one final thing to talk about before we end the show.
What do we got, Joe?
And that is our MVP of the week. And I know we kind of did a underrated of 2022, but kind of the main big thing, the thing I was hyped about the most, the thing that got me excited, that's like, wow, I have something I'm actually going to enjoy talking about this week when I didn't think I would. And that's Murderville, the Christmas special. And I've been going back and forth in my head of who my MVP is. Do I go Jason Bateman, the guest star who was there for most of the episode, or do I go with Pete Davidson, the guest star that was there for less than 5 minutes and had me dying laughing with every single thing he did throughout the episode? And the more I think about it, especially if we're talking, especially an episode where we talk all of 22, I would rather pick the guy who dominated the conversation of 2022, even if it wasn't necessarily in the streaming world. And I would love to name Pete Davidson the MVP of December 19th, 2022.
Let's give it to Pete Davidson. You know, he's had a wild year, that Pete Davidson. So right. I feel like he can be our MVP going into almost the end of the year here. I think we got like one episode left, but you know, he's got our almost last MVP.
Yeah, Pete Davidson with our MVP. I think this could be our final MVP of the week, because next year we're giving out handies. And we're going to be having an MVP of the year. I don't necessarily know if we're going to be doing an MVP of the week. So we have a bunch of fun awards, some serious, some fun. Let me read off a few categories to you.
So you kind of have some highlights.
So you can kind of have an idea. And basically how we're going to run this is Tristan and I are separately at, look at the categories, and we're each going to have our own nomination. And then live during the show, we're going to reveal our nominations to each other. And then we're going to discuss it out, hash it out, and try to determine the winner. So awards we're going to have is Best Streaming Service, Worst Streaming Service, Best Movie Performance, Most Anticipated 2023, Scene of the Year, another fun one, Alexa, Cancel My Subscription. And that's where a moment is just so bad that you're like, I don't even want to pay for this service anymore. And flipping through me and Tristan's discussion, I realized I completely whiffed on something. Something I actually wanted to talk about, and let me get to it really quick before we end the show, and that's a show that dropped the first two episodes on Disney Plus. I only watched the first one, and that's National Treasure: Edge of History. I'm going to say something I didn't think I would have said when I started the first episode. First episode was pretty good. First image they dropped, horrible mistake on every level because it made the show look cheap and horrible. It was the main cast of new characters, no one from the movies. Sitting in a cheap-looking prison cell in cheap-looking prison clothes, and you're like, why would you intentionally make your show look bad? And if you could pick any first image and that's the image they chose, then the show must look like crap. Honestly, the show doesn't look that bad. That scene actually takes place in an escape room, not an actual prison, so that explains why everything doesn't exactly look great, because it's not supposed to. So again, why they chose that as the first image without saying, like, hey, this is from an escape room, astounds me. I haven't watched the second episode. I could watch the second episode and be like, nope, never mind, this show sucks. But I'm actually liking the premise. Do I miss Nicolas Cage a little bit? But they have enough connections to the movies with a few characters from the movies that potentially this thing gets green light for season two. We could get Nicolas Cage appearing in season two.
I would love to see Nicolas Cage show up, you know. I'm kind of curious about this. I think if it gets through the whole first season and people are saying that it actually is kind of a cool mystery and pays off, I'll check it out. But I'm hesitant. You know, that first image definitely holds me back. But not just that, just the whole general premise of it. It feels like it's on the verge of just being one of the another IP revivals that Disney Plus drops and then never talks about again. So, you know, I'm hesitant to dive into the pool because I do love National Treasure. But I feel like Nick Cage is why you love National Treasure, you know? You love the kind of mystery and the exciting thrills and the kind of hidden history kind of stuff. But I think it is Nicolas Cage. So I am curious to see how much the show gets into, like, the drama and the mystery and the hidden histories of National Treasure and those kind of things. I'm excited to see how it plays out, but you're probably going to be the one telling me how it goes, you know?
Will do. All right. I believe that wraps up our show. Sorry for getting Mount National Treasure Edge of History. And catch you next week where we're giving out some handies. So without further ado, goodbye.